I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to take a look at CrimeCon, a true crime convention that opens in Indianapolis this weekend. We'll talk about the convention's events and the fascination that the study of crime holds for so many people. My guests are local featured CrimeCon speaker Christine Manina, an IMPD officer and former homicide detective, and Ken Balfe, Red Seat Ventures. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimits@wfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about CrimeCon. It's a true crime convention that's coming to Indianapolis this weekend. It features over 40 guest experts over 3 days. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are, first guest is one of the speakers for the CrimeCon convention, and that is Christine Manina. She is an IMPD officer and former homicide detective. In a little while, we'll be joined by Ken Balfe of Red Seat Ventures. Christine, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you having me.
It's good to have you here. So why don't we start by talking a little bit about what CrimeCon is?
Well, CrimeCon is a convention over 3 days for crime enthusiasts. There's a lot of people out there that enjoy crime shows. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who I think wanted to maybe be the police at some point or be a detective or forensic person, crime lab, those types of things. And they will get the opportunity to experience what that would be like. There'll be a lot of fabulous speakers coming, mm-hmm. And there'll be authors there. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be a good kind of interactive experience to see what it's really like to investigate these types of things.
Now, what do you plan to talk about?
Well, I'm going to talk about my career as a homicide detective here in Indianapolis and kind of give a real deal explanation of what it's really like. Indianapolis is a great city. However, we do have crimes that occur. I delved into the homicide branch for 9 years and investigated a lot of murders. So I think I'll just explain kind of what that's like, kind of a couple of the more intriguing cases that I had, take questions from people. I think there's a fine line of what you see on TV and what we really do, and try to clear up maybe some of those questions and just kind of give people a fun experience to kind of live through me a little bit and see, you know, they get excited about these types of shows. They're very, very popular. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be a fun atmosphere for people to experience what that might be like.
Well, and you've been part of that, too, because you've been featured on shows for the Discovery Channel and others. You've been part of that experience of sort of the real life crime story. What's that like?
You know, it was a fun experience. We were really blessed. I had such a great team working when Investigation Discovery, the shift came to Indianapolis, and they filmed us. It was kind of like a first 48 type of thing where they, you know, just had cameras on us the entire time of the investigation. And I think at first it was a little, you know, awkward because that never happened. But once you start investigating these crimes, we kind of forgot about the camera and just did our job. But I think it gave, you know, the viewers and the city of Indianapolis kind of highlighted what we do. And it just showed, you know, kind of what it's like. And it was a fun experience. We, you know, they were here because we were so successful. We had one of the highest clearance rates in the nation. Mm-hmm. And so they decided to come feature us, and I think it worked out well.
How did it change? I mean, you know, normally police officers, unless they're in uniform, you know, they're just like one of us. But then once you're on television and are part of a program like that, you become something else, you know, a kind of public figure. I hesitate to use the term celebrity, but there is a certain amount of celebrity that comes with being featured as part of that. How did that affect you and your life or did it at all?
It was a nice experience. I mean, people were very gracious when they came up to me or saw me and any of the other detectives that were featured. A lot of people stopped and thanked us for what we did. I don't think they realize, you know, what it's truly like to investigate a homicide case from the beginning to the end. Mm-hmm. But people were gracious. It was fun. I enjoyed it. And it highlighted, you know, what IPD can do.
What did, when you say people don't get what it's like to investigate a homicide from the beginning, what's the biggest misconception about it?
Well, I think, you know, TV kind of blurs it a little bit. These shows that are so popular, CSI and those different shows, you know, nothing's ever solved in an hour. You know, and when we go to court, you know, the juries want DNA and they want fingerprints. And all those things are difficult to get. I mean, we get them sometimes, but not always. So I think it, you know, it takes a lot more work. It's not a glamorous. The title might be glamorous, but the work is not glamorous at all. It can be grueling and long. And I think that they kind of got a taste of what that is like if they were, you know, even though the, you know, shift was an hour show, it still showed the kind of day-to-day operations and how you have to kind of kill it the first 48 hours of a homicide in order to get it solved. And I think that was kind of an eye-opener to people.
We are talking with IMPD officer Christine Menina, who's going to be one of the featured speakers at this weekend's CrimeCon. It's a true crime convention coming to Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So when you covered your first homicide, how long ago was that? Do you remember the circumstances?
About 2001. Yeah, it was. I remember that one very well.
Okay. What were the circumstances?
It led me over to a park on the west side. It was in the middle of the night, probably about 1:30 in the morning. It was freezing outside. Mm-hmm. And it was the park off of 16th Street, right across from UPS. And when I arrived at the scene, there was a vehicle there. And I kind of parked a little bit farther away, and it wasn't a typical scene. It was just the officer in a vehicle that I could see. So the scene was very quiet because it was kind of, you know, out there off the roadway. So there weren't a lot of people. The crime scene tape wasn't up. Mm-hmm. And when I walked up to the vehicle, there was a gentleman that was underneath the vehicle. He had been hit. And as I investigated it a little bit more, I could see tire tracks and donut marks. And it, you know, it appeared at first that the vehicle was chasing the subject, and it ran over the victim. And it was difficult because I think, you know, I had shadowed detectives before, and there had been shootings and stabbings and things, and it looked a little different. I remember thinking this looked like the Wizard of Oz when the house fell on the witch, because literally the legs were sticking out from the back of the car. And so, you know, I could still kind of smell burning flesh. And it was so it was just kind of surreal, and it was very quiet. It was just another officer and I before, you know, my partners got there. So, you know, it was a fight that occurred earlier in the evening between a female and a male. And it led to the park, and there was a lot of alcohol involved, and he had attempted to assault her, and a fight ensued, and he was outside of the vehicle. She jumped in the vehicle and then ran over him and ended up kind of getting stuck on him. And then fleeing the scene.
So was it a relatively easy one to solve then, or was there?
It was fairly easy. Your first homicide, it's just the amount of work is enormous. Even if it's a one where you can kind of figure out quickly, it's just a lot of work and a lot of parts to put it together. But it was, I would have to say it was fairly easy for my first one. I was able to solve it and get a confession and it get to court, and she was convicted of it. So, yeah, in the big picture of things, it was fairly easy.
Now, even in a circumstance like this where it's relatively, you're still dealing with incredibly unhappy circumstances where, you know, people are, you know, either at their worst or their most vulnerable or both. And all of that. Is it difficult to develop a kind of emotional detachment about dealing with this, because, you know, in some ways, with Wizard of Oz, to use the example you talked about, we can say, oh, that's just a movie. You know, no one really died there or anything like that. You don't get to do that with a homicide. Someone did really die. Something horrible really did happen. How do you achieve something resembling an emotional balance in dealing with it?
Well, I think you never really become emotionally detached. I think in order to do the job well and be successful, you have to become emotionally involved in it. I think, like everything else, there's a balance to it. It took me a while to kind of get that balance. I think even as just street officers, it kind of becomes who you are, and it never really turns off because you're kind of always paying attention to your surroundings and you're never really off duty. Mm-hmm. But with these homicides, you know, you live and breathe it for a long, long time, and you're dealing with victims' families and suspects' families, and it's, you know, you have to develop a balance. I think when I go home, I don't talk a lot about these cases, even though it's an interesting subject to my friends and family, especially if they see something on the news or they ask me, did I catch that case? But it's a tough balance. But I think in order to be good at it, you don't turn it off completely, because you're dealing with people's lives and you're dealing with the loss for people, and you're having to, you know, you're having to try to find some type of closure for the family. And so, you know, to detach yourself emotionally, I think, would be more difficult than it would be worth, because, you know, you're trying to give them some peace after a horrible, horrible incident.
What did you always want to be a police officer?
Absolutely.
And was your aim always to be a homicide detective, or is that something that just intrigued you along the way?
I think, I wanted to be a police officer since I was 7, and my father got pulled over on the way home from grandma's, and I was intrigued by that whole experience. And then we had an incident when I was very young with a young man trying to break into our home, and seeing that whole kind of, you know, event kind of in front of me, and I realized I wasn't scared. I was kind of excited by it, and it never changed. So I always wanted to be a police officer and dressed up every Halloween and patrolled the streets of my neighborhood as a child, and wrote tickets on my parents' cars and my neighbor's cars. And, you know, so it just kind of followed me all the way through. And I think when I was working the street, you know, as a young officer, as a rookie, running around taking runs and being in uniform, when we would get a homicide, you know, it was just such an event when these homicide detectives came out to the scene, and we literally just turned the case over to them. And I thought, man, you know, I want to be the best of the best. I want to investigate the worst criminals. And I think that's what intrigued me. What I thought at the time I could make the bigger difference.
We are talking about CrimeCon, and specifically right now we're talking with one of the CrimeCon speakers, Christine Menina, an IMPD officer and former homicide detective. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Mary has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Mary, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I am just wanting to ask Officer Christine if where does she find her support group outside of work? You know, you go home so stressed or you know, overwhelmed with your day-to-day activity, where do you find most of your support group?
Thanks very much.
Within the police department or your own family friends?
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I'll get an answer from Christine.
That's a good question. Thank you for calling in. I think I've been very, very blessed. I have a small core of friends that I've had for my entire life, and my family is very, very good, but I've got a small core group of people that have known me since I wanted to be the police, that are still involved in my life, and they balance me, and they've been great, and they know exactly who they are, and so my family's been supportive. I didn't have any law enforcement in my family, but they've been supportive of it, and like I said, the friends that I've had as children are still my very best friends today.
What do, when you say that they balance you, what is the thing they have to do to balance you?
You know, they just let me be me. They know what my interests are, and it doesn't have to be. I'm not a police officer to them. I'm not a, you know, homicide detective that's on TV. I'm just Chris, And that's how they treat me. And, you know, they know all my secrets and all my bad habits and things that I've silly things that I've done. And they just let me be me.
We are talking about Crime Con. We're talking right now with one of the Crime Con speakers, Christine Menina, who is an IMPD officer and former homicide detective. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Again, we're talking about Crime Con. That's the true crime convention that's coming to Indianapolis this weekend. My guest is Christine Menina. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking today about Crime Con. It's a true crime convention that's coming to Indianapolis this weekend. It's going to feature over 40 guest experts speaking over those 3 days. My guest right now is one of those featured experts, Crime Con speaker Christine Menina, who is an IMPD officer and former homicide detective. We'll be joined shortly by Ken Balf. He is with Red Seat Ventures. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So, Christine, we talked about Crime Con and what it is. I mean, if we had 40 guest experts, do we have any idea how many people are supposed to show up for this thing?
You know, I don't really. I think several thousand. I know it's been sold out for a while, so I think we're expecting a really good turnout.
Big crowd. And where is it?
It's at the JW Marriott downtown.
Okay, so it's a big hotel.
Yes.
And all of that. And it's sold out, which sort of leads me into this. We talked about it, and I'm not disputing it because I've witnessed the phenomenon myself. But when I see things that people are really fascinated by, I'm always intrigued by, okay, where does that fascination come from? What is it about this particular subject that intrigues us so much? You're right. There are very few people who are not fascinated by the whole problem of crime. Do you have, given your long experience in sort of studying the reasons for crime itself, do you have any insights as to what it is about criminal behavior that intrigues us so much?
That's a fantastic question. I think it's just the intrigue of you hear a crazy crime and you're like, wow, did somebody really do that? And I think people get intrigued by, you know, what led them to do that and the kind of ins and outs and the drama and the conflict. It's kind of like a car accident, you know, when you're driving by a car accident and everybody looks to see. And I don't know if that gives them some type of adrenaline rush or excitement or be able to see it firsthand because they're driving by. It's kind of the same thing with these crimes. And I think that it gets the juices flowing. And I think actually a lot of people, you know, want to do this type of work, maybe didn't go into it, but are intrigued by it. And I think it's the whodunit and trying to figure it out and just human nature. And then, you know, with these crimes that occur, you kind of just step back and go, wow, are people really doing this to one another? You hear these crazy things and then, you know, you turn on the news every day and it's one thing after the other. And I think just, you know, the whole putting the pieces together, human behavior and what people are capable of and trying to get inside of the minds of people, I think is fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's something that I really enjoy when I go into an interrogation and interview is trying to delve into the mind of this person and the small line. You know, I tell people a lot, it's a small line that's crossed. A lot of people, you know, you're able to control yourself when you get very, very angry. And then there's the type of population that can't. Mm-hmm. And they'll step over that line and pull the trigger or run you over. And that fine line of what it made for you to snap as opposed to me. And I just think all those things are just, and it's glamorized, you know, there's so many shows on TV. It's a it's a cool job, and, you know, it appears to be a cool job, I'll put it that way. And, you know, people just, they just love it. They eat it up.
Well, it is interesting, though, because I was thinking as we prepared for this show and this conversation, you know, even the fictional depictions of crime dramas now are much more procedural. The CSIs, the Law and Orders, and all of that, as opposed to the shows, the crime dramas when I was a kid were, you know, Joe Mannix or Magnum or somebody like that, you know, a tall, square-jawed, single hero out there hunting down the evildoer, generally violating almost as many laws as the bad guy did in the process. But the shows now are much more focused on, grounded in something resembling a kind of reality. You're right, the CSIs, things don't get solved in an hour, but they emphasize there's a process to this, there's a method. What do you think accounted for that change in our culture? And then the explosion of all of these sort of ongoing reality shows where, again, like you, they followed you around and saw how real detectives do it.
Well, I think, you know, with those shows in the past, you know, those were entertaining. And I think somewhere along the line, the phenomenon of reality TV jumped in big time. And I think people want to see kind of the real deal of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that those fictional shows and things are interesting. But, you know, you watch enough of those fictional shows and then if you can see reality, you're almost like, wow, this stuff does happen. It may not happen exactly like it does on TV, but it does happen. And I think, you know, in this day and age, reality shows are just so huge. I mean, you don't even have to have any talent. You can have a show and they'll follow you around. And, you know, and even with Facebook, you know, people are telling what they're doing every second of the day. Mm-hmm. And people love it. So I think, you know, the reality, and then you throw in the crime part of it, and people, you know, especially when it's happening in their city, you know, people that were enjoying the shift, they're like, wow, I've been to that part of the city, or I recognize that building and things like that. So, you know, I think it was the right timing of reality TV. And then you throw the crime, you know, because crime happens every day, you know, and now it's being featured on shows.
We are talking about Crime Con, and more specifically about our fascination with crime as a culture. If you want to join the conversation, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. You can send us an email at nolimits@WFYI.org. Or you can do what a listener named Jeff has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I was wondering if she could take her career and sort of boil it down and get the essence of what she's learned about her fellow man. What's that lesson that she takes away from all this?
Good question. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Jeff.
Sure.
Great question. Thank you, Jeff. I think that, you know, it's kind of twofold. I think at the end of the day, most people are good people. And I think I've tried to really remember that in the realm of 22 years of dealing with people at their worst. But I truly believe that people are good for the most part. With that being said, I've learned a lot about human nature and, this day and age of crime. You know, it kind of shows me that there's not the small element of people that commit crimes. It's really a small element. If you take the statistics and you break it down, it's a small group of people that commit most of the crime. With that being said, that type of mentality is really, you know, not a lot of regard for life, not a lot of regard for, you know, goals and future. And, you know, they're not expected, you know, the young people that I've dealt with, if they weren't victims, you know, that I had to tell mom that their son, 18, 19, 20, 21 year old kids have been killed, then I'm dealing with them on the suspect part of it. And they don't think that they are going to be alive much longer. And so that's their mentality, and that's been kind of surprising. But I think really overall, I think people are good people. I think that It's a hard balance, but you have to remember that. So in 22 years, I've tried to do a lot of good. I think, you know, if I look back, I hope I made a difference. I've helped people. But it's given me a lot of satisfaction, and I do truly believe most people are good in trying to do the right things.
Does anything still shock you? I mean, you know, my guess is the first time you encountered some of this horrible stuff, it was, whoa.
I don't think so. No. It's sad to say, think so. You know, when the Delphi case occurred, it didn't shock me. It is... horribly sad as that was,
yeah.
I didn't go, wow, I can't believe, you know, that happened. So, unfortunately, after 22 years, no.
Very rarely.
Very rarely.
We are talking about CrimeCon and really about the fascination we have with crime as a culture. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Monica has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Monica, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Certainly.
I wanted to know, Detective, what was it like, you know, I mean, you're a female detective being kind of in a man's world, and then what are you working on now? Are we going to see you on more TV? I mean, I remember the shift when it was here, and it really was groundbreaking, and I would love to see you on TV again. So kind of a twofold question.
Thanks very much for the call and the question.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling. You know, Monica, that's a good. Those are good questions. Being a female, you know, my very first job as a police officer was up in Bremen, Indiana, which had about 1,500 people, and I was the first female hired in the town, and the first female in the county. So right then and there, that was the experience of getting into a man's club. And that wasn't, I wouldn't look back on that and say it was an overly wonderful experience trying to delve into a small town and being an unknown and then being a female. When I transitioned to down to IPD, you know, it's difficult. There's not a lot of us out here. We police a little bit different. But I think, you know, once I got into my first fight, and literally I remember it, you know, you jump in when your partner's getting beat up at 30th and Meridian or wherever, and you jump in and you get into the fight, then that kind of, you know, it kind of introduces you to the guys and says, okay, look, I'm probably not as strong as you are, but I will get in and I will fight and I will try to save you if you're being hurt. And then, you know, the transition again up into homicide, you know, there was only one other female detective when I got there, and she had been in there a while, and she kind of took me under her wing, and you know, it all comes with attitude. As much as I was insecure and nervous, I tried to act like I belonged, and it really came down to hard work. And, you know, I think that as you go along the process, you kind of realize that you just got to do your job and kind of not care what people think, because really you're working for the victim and you're working for their families. But it was not an easy thing. But you just go in there and prove yourself. I wasn't going to take any crap from anybody. I'll stand up for myself, and you just kind of have to do that without being overly aggressive. And once I prove myself, you know, both physically, you know, emotionally, mentally, I can work 48, 72 hours, whatever I got to do, it made the transition a lot easier. But it absolutely is a man's world. But I've been lucky and blessed with the people that I've worked with on the most part that's kind of accepted me.
How long did it take you? You said you acted like you felt like you belonged. How long did it get you to the point where you felt like you belonged?
Well, I think, you know, on the street, it didn't take too long because mm-hmm. I was working late shift in one of the worst parts of the city. So it only took me about two nights to get into a scuffle. And once the guys that were working the beat with me saw me get into it, then I was kind of accepted. And you just have to continue to do that. I mean, you're each other's. You know, you're trying to go home. We're all trying to go home at the end of the mm-hmm. shift and jumping in the fight. But as far as homicide, it took a while. I think it's an intimidating atmosphere. I think that you know, you're continually trying to prove yourself. And I think it takes about 2 years to really kind of get good at what you're doing. And it's high pressure. It's stressful. So I would say probably 2 years I felt like when I walked in, I belonged.
Gwen, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I'm sitting here listening. This is very interesting. I'm just thinking about the movement, the Black Lives Matter. I want to ask, how does our guest relate to this movement and the way that she keeps herself when she's working with groups not to stereotype African-Americans and Hispanics in particular as she interacts with them in the community and when there's traffic stops and other encounters with African-Americans? What training has she had in order to make sure that that stereotypic pattern that so many people have without even knowing it, how does she handle that?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Gwen.
Thank you.
I think, Gwen, thank you for calling. I think, you know, the best training I've had were my parents. I lived in kind of a diverse neighborhood, and it just, you know, they just taught me to treat everybody with respect. It's not ever been that complicated to me. And I don't know, I know that people have views and opinions, but you just kind of treat people the way you want to be treated. My parents, you know, taught me that very early on, and I just don't look at people and try to stereotype them, you know, in any way. Just, you know, you treat people how you want to be treated. And I think, you know, as far as traffic stops, you know, I take, you know, when I pull somebody over, I know they're nervous, you know, and I am too, because I'm walking up on an unknown and they are nervous being stopped by the police. And, you know, at the end of the day, I need to do my job. I don't want to have to shoot anybody or hurt anybody, and nor do I want to, you know, be shot or get hurt. And I think it's all in the way that you talk to people. And I think being a female officer, what I learned early on is, you know, probably my first night out on the street, that everybody that I came into contact with me was probably stronger and tougher, you know, physically than I was. So I learned early on that you can dictate a lot of these runs and not escalate them by just speaking with respect, regardless of what the crime. You know, I've had the worst of the worst criminals sitting across from me in these interviews, and I still treat them with respect. And I think that's done a great, great thing for me. But I got to credit my folks with just, you know, the minute I was born, I was just taught those types of things, and I just kind of carried it on in my life.
We are joined now by the CrimeCon organizer, Kevin Balfe. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Certainly. We're getting close to a break here real quickly. But I wanted to ask, how many people do you expect to attend the CrimeCon?
Well, it's a great question. We're not putting numbers out there yet, but it's going to be a really big crowd. I think the JW is going to be packed. If people come out, they are definitely not going to be alone. And hearing great people like Christine speak through the weekend, it should be a lot of fun.
Well, and I hear it's been sold out for quite a while, right?
No. There's passes available. We put day passes on sale. We had some sellouts among the weekend badges, but we did put day passes on sale, and so people are welcome to come out and just check out Friday or Saturday or Sunday, or come for the whole weekend.
So, if people want to buy passes to this, where should they go to get the information?
Yeah, simple. CrimeCon.com has all the speaker info, all the whole weekend schedule, and then of course the registration form is up there as well. So very easy.
And what's the cost if people want to attend?
I think each day is a little bit different. Friday, I believe, is around $100. Saturday is sort of starts at 12:30, so it's sort of a half day. Saturday is a full day. I think it's $175, and Sunday is around $90 for the morning. And those are, you know, all access sort of things. So unlike if people are used to typical conventions where you sort of pay for things as you go, this is just kind of pay once and then just kind of make your track through the weekend of however, whatever sort of stuff you want to go through.
We are talking about CrimeCon. It's the True Crime Convention coming to Indianapolis this weekend. My guests are one of the speakers at the convention, Christine Menina. She is an IMPD officer and former homicide detective. And Kevin Balfe with Red Seat Ventures, one of the event's organizers. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email, find us on social media, or give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about CrimeCon. It's a true crime convention that's coming to Indianapolis this weekend that's going to feature more than 40 guest experts over that three-day period. My guests are one of the local featured speakers, IMPD officer and former homicide detective Christine Menina, and Kevin Balf of Red Seat Ventures, one of the organizers of the event. So, Kevin, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Christine a little earlier, because I'm fascinated by what it is that intrigues people. What do you think is the fascination with crime that prompts so many people to say, you know, not only am I going to devote 3 days to this, but I'm also going to spend a couple $100s because this just interests me and intrigues me. What's the fascination? What's the source of the fascination, you think?
Yeah, well, I wish I had heard Christine's answer earlier.
it was brilliant. Not to put any pressure on you, but it was brilliant.
Well, you know, to me, it's always been, and I'm a true crime fan first and foremost, which is sort of how the idea came about in the first place. You know, I love Dateline NBC. I've watched Dateline for years and years. And the way a Keith Morrison or a Josh Mankiewicz tells a story is so compelling. And I think ultimately, you know, when you boil it down, that's what true crime really is. It's stories. And I think people react to the human element of that. You know, we all can relate in some way to the fear of a missing person or to the fear of a crime happening to a loved one. And then when you get into some of the crimes and some of the cases and the stories, I think that we're covering, the ones that have sort of, you know, risen above, you get into these other human elements, right? Mystery and intrigue and drama. And I think you combine all that and it's just kind of, it's, you know, it's the best kind of story in that they're real. And in a lot of cases, and especially the stuff that we've tried to bring to this weekend and focus on, they're oftentimes cases that where things can still be done. And I think for this newer crop of fans into the genre, and again, the sort of stuff that we're trying to uncover for the weekend is not really just kind of passively sitting in your seat and listening to, like, here's what happened at the OJ trial. It's much more about how do we leverage ourselves as intelligent, smart people who all have our own networks, who all want to be out there and be helpful. Is there a way to create good out of this? You know, there's some panels around, for example, the Golden State Killer, which is still an active case. It's the Golden State Killer and East Area Rapist is you know, one of the worst cases in American history in terms of a serial killer who's still not caught and identified. And victims and family members of victims are coming in to sort of say, hey, you know, I know there's shiny new objects all over the place, but hey, we're still here and we're looking for this guy and we need help. And, you know, new clues, new leads, new sketches, you know, anything possible to sort of help reignite these things. And to me, the idea that we've got all of this media and all of these podcasters and all of these folks who have ability to amplify things beyond the walls of the JW Marriott for this weekend, when we have things like that, hopefully we sort of create this groundswell and can do some real good in some of these cases. A long-winded way of answering your question, but I think that's what attracts people to true crime, at least it's what attracts me.
We're talking about CrimeCon. It's a true crime convention that's going to be here in Indianapolis over the weekend. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Jim has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. I wonder about all of this exposure about, you know, forensics and how crimes are solved. Is there any kind of organized concern among law enforcement that we're giving away our trade secrets here and, you know, we're telling people what to not do when they commit crimes if they don't want to get caught. Not to poo-poo the whole thing. I mean, I'm fascinated by true crime, too. But I've always wondered, you know, like, if you're telling people how other people got caught, then
if you're showing the other team, if you're showing the other team your playbook, basically.
Exactly.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Christine.
Well, I think that a majority of the crimes are not necessarily planned. I see your point absolutely. If you're looking at someone who is a career criminal or someone who is planning to do a lot of things, then yes, I think some of these shows will give some information that maybe wouldn't be great for them to have. But the majority of the homicides, if not all of them, that I dealt with happened very, very quickly. And with that being said, they didn't wake up that morning and decide, okay, I'm going to go kill somebody today. Events led up to that point, and that made them, for lack of better words, sloppy in how they did it. So I think that to answer your question, most of the time these crimes that are committed happen very, very quickly, and they're not pre-planned. You're always going to have, you know, those people that plan to do things and, you know, but that's no different. You know, you can look on the internet and find out how to do anything. So I think that, you know, we do give away some secrets sometimes, but these people do it very, very quickly and evidence is left behind. And then when you get them into the interview room, you know, when you're good at your job, human nature, most people want to talk. And if you work at it enough and you talk to them enough and you're good enough at it, then you can get what you need from them.
How much of this also is this perception maybe created by the whole Sherlock Holmes tradition, all of that, that criminals at some level are geniuses when, in fact, many of them are not? I mean, I remember when I was a reporter for the newspaper covering a murder in which there was a robbery involved. They stole a bunch of money, and they'd read somewhere that it was really important after that to launder the money. You know where this is going. They threw it into a washing machine, pulled it back out, and thought somehow that had solved their problem. That was the level of intelligence. How many of the folks that you encounter actually have planned anything involved with a crime they have committed?
I think I probably had one case that I can think of offhand where it was, you know, they hid the body and they did a pretty good job. We still were able to find it. But like I said before, luckily, the people that commit these things aren't real bright. I mean, they're willing to, you know, you're not real bright if you're deciding to take someone's life and spend the rest of your life in prison, which will happen, you know, more times than it won't. So luckily, with them not being, you know, very bright, it makes us look good at what we're doing.
Kevin, with these, what's the biggest draw at these conventions? I mean, who are the speakers that literally just pack the room?
Yeah, you know, this is our first year, so it's going to be, we're all going to find out together, I guess, you know, who people are sort of most excited to come out for. My hunch, to be honest with you, is that I think the names will always draw, you know, people are attracted to the sort of, you know, the celebrity of a Nancy Grace or a Josh Mankiewicz or even like an F. Lee Bailey, you know, someone sort of legendary in the space as a professional. But I think the stuff that ultimately when people leave that they're actually going to remember are the more the experience sort of things that we've created. Like the one I always tell people I think is going to be my highlight of the weekend is this thing called the jury experience. And the premise is, as much true crime as you watch, you've never been inside a jury room. You've never watched what it's like to try to get 12 people to agree to something. And so how do we create that experience for someone to feel that pressure and to feel that, you know, how do I convince these 11 other people that I'm right? And so it's going to be a full mock trial, professional screen writers, actors, the whole thing sort of live played out for people. And then they're going to be physically on a jury. They're going to go out to their own room and they're going to have a half hour to deliberate. And it'd be really fascinating to watch all those juries come back and sort of see, you know, did they all reach the same verdict, different verdicts, why, how many were hung? And I think it's that kind of stuff that ultimately will sort of, you know, when everyone goes back home and watches the shows they love again, maybe people can all relate a little bit better of, you know, that stupid jury and making a murderer, how could they have done that? Well, you know, maybe because it's not as easy as you think, or maybe because there's these other things that you didn't sort of appreciate before. And so I do hope that people kind of get that out of it versus just some of the ballroom presentations.
And I know, Kevin, we've got to let you go because you're operating on a tight schedule. So I'm going to ask you one more time, if people want to attend the convention, how should they go about reserving a space, getting information?
Sure. Real simple, crimecon.com, and all the info's up there, registration links. Like I said, you can buy a full weekend, you can buy day passes, and all the credentialing, all the badges are just picked up on site when you get there. So, you know, everything can be last minute. No worries about getting anything mailed ahead of time.
And it's at the JW Marriott here in downtown Indianapolis, correct?
Exactly. Yep. It's Friday.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Kevin. Really
thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Appreciate it.
Certainly. We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Sammy, and if you want to find us on Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Sammy writes, and this is to Christine, "You're such an inspiration. Thanks for sharing your stories. Thank you for rising above all of the adversity you mentioned. You're a role model to all, and any woman in doubt needs to consult their local Christine Menina." It's got to feel pretty good.
Ah, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for taking the time and for the kind words. Thank you.
We are talking about CrimeCon here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Kevin has done, not the Kevin who is the event organizer, and call us at 866-476-3881. Kevin, welcome to the program.
You were right. That answer at the beginning from your detective was just absolutely brilliant, where she compared this to watching a car crash. My question to her is, and everybody on the panel, do you feel like these may desensitize people? I know I've heard it referred to as murder porn before. Some of the stuff that they have on television and this convention that's going to draw a lot of people. And do you feel like it might be at the expense of other people? I mean, it's almost akin to a snuff film. I wonder what you're feeling about that is, but don't let me take anything away from you. You're doing an incredible job, and I appreciate the job you're doing in our community by finding some of these people that do this. So,
thanks very much for the call and the question, Kevin. It's a heavy one. Thanks.
Thank you, Kevin. Gosh, that's a difficult question. You hope that people don't get desensitized to it. I think that the people. You know, it's interesting because a lot of these neighborhoods that I have worked in, crimes are happening all the time. But when you go and you tell a mother that their son or daughter or whoever has been murdered, that, you know, you don't ever get used to that as a detective or as the person receiving the news. So I think that, you know, there's always a chance. But I think if people can kind of just remember, you know, the emotional aspect of this and how it truly affects so many people. You know, when you have a victim, think about all the people that knew that victim and all the lives and everything that has been affected by that one event. And then you flip it over and you've got the suspect who, you know, hopefully I've arrested, and the effect that it had on their family because they were somebody's son, grandson, cousin, brother. You know, and there's good people in these families on both sides. So I think that if people can keep an open mind and maybe it can do something more positive and give the fact that, you know, crime is real and it is happening a lot. And maybe the more exposure and the more knowledge we can get on just kind of going back to the basic of, you know, let's just treat one another better and let's get better tools for young people to be able to deal with issues that are coming up and their anger and different things. And maybe we can kind of make it more of a positive thing than trying to numb it down. But I absolutely see your point with that.
We're talking about CrimeCon and really our fascination with crime in general as a culture. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi,
Christine. I was just interested in how Christine, I know we were talking earlier about how you work with suspects, I mean, with the victims' families, but have you ever dealt with issues as it relates to dealing with the suspects themselves and maybe closing the circle and some of the issues with some of the suspects, a little bit more of the compassionate side of some of the suspects' issues?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Aaron.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, my approach in my entire career of police is that I get called on people's worst days. I mean, nobody's calling the police when they're having a good day. So I arrive when people are at their worst. And I try to step outside of the box, step outside of the uniform a little bit, and try to put myself in their position, even if they've done something really bad. Because, you know, they didn't, like I've said before, I don't think that they woke up that day and thought, okay, I'm going to go commit this crime. And so I've had a ton of compassion for suspects and how they got into that situation and made that choice. You know, going back to the very first case I had, this woman that ran over this gentleman, she was not a bad person. And I remember thinking, wow, is this the way it's going to be? Because she was not a bad person. Now, she made a bad decision that led to, you know, a lot of years in prison. But when I looked at her as a whole, I thought, you know, crap, this woman is not, you know, she's got a child. She, you know, she's not a bad, mean kind of what I had in my head of what a homicide suspect looked like. And so it kind of gave me some perspective of, you know, people are human. And that fine line that I mentioned about crossing it as opposed to the people that don't, because there's not, it's not a very, very big line. If you can imagine when you were the most angry at somebody, you know, you were able to control it, and some people can't. But again, when you have to tell a mother that your son is being arrested, or I'm sitting in the courtroom when the jury decides that this person is guilty, you've got the victim's family over there that are happy, and then you've got the suspect's family that are now going to be affected for the rest of their lives if they send their loved one to prison. So I think you got to keep, I got to do my job. And I've been, you know, lucky to, I just think the way I was raised, that it just kind of showed me that people make bad, bad decisions, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad people. So trying to keep that in perspective, I think, has helped me a lot.
When do you talk at the Crime Con? When
I am Friday at, I believe, 1 o'clock.
Okay.
I think 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock.
So, and just then, a few days.
And then the podcast, my podcast is Saturday at noon.
Well, that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Christine Menina, an IMPD officer and former homicide detective, and Kevin Balfe of Red Seat Ventures. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you all for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.